Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say
nerds ruin everything. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan. And hopefully you're hearing this, because this is new, so.
Yes, because they decided to get rid of everybody's favorite recording thing, Skype, in order for Teams. And, you know, in true Microsoft fashion, you know, they're charging for everything. So, you know. But, you know, we got a new Pope, an American Pope from Chicago, of all places. That's the major news. That's always fun. We're back talking, as we promised, Star Wars, and probably some stuff that we've been watching, because, if we have time.
I've got one to spring on you.
Okay. I've got a couple things.
That's kind of a pun. Okay. So I needed a little bit of a palate cleanser, and I went to Netflix, and I was just gonna put on Seinfeld, and I saw that there was a new show on Netflix called Four Seasons.
Already watched it, brother.
And
you don't even have to judge. We watched it. The Alan Alda, the adaptation of the Alan Alda film. Yeah.
I was like, Steve Carell. I like all these people. Steve Carell, Coleman Domingo, Tina Fey, the guy that plays her husband in the show.
MacGruber himself.
Yeah, I can't think of his freaking name.
Will Forte. Will Forte.
Like, it's Will, but it's not Will Sasso, and it's not Will Arnett.
Yes. Mario Cavalli, who plays, like, it's a whole ensemble. Like, it's a great ensemble. Even Alan Alda shows up in a tiny role.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really sweet that they got to use him in a way, and it created this kind of passing the torch moment. So, I'm gonna go, just admit that I've never seen the Alan Alda film. Like, I'm aware of it. I'm aware of, like, the premise. And so, like, I don't know. I can't speak to, like, how this is as an adaptation or a remake or whatever you want to call it.
It's definitely expounded upon. The movie is very Alan Alda. To which I'm going to say something that may turn people off, but I don't give a shit, because it's the closest thing I can give as a reference point. Alan Alda had worked with Woody Allen, and so it feels very Allen-esque, except for instead of it being Woody Allen, it's Alan Alda. So, like, if you like Alan Alda's personality and you like his kind of specific type of comedy infused with that, like, romantic entanglement ensemble thing, like Hannah and her sisters, it's very much like that, but it's a very abbreviated version. This is very kind of like, it expounds on it. It kind of like, I mean, we can talk about it, because, like, you know, the setup is kind of interesting, how it's like two episodes per season, like literally per the season. This week has all been about, like, this weird, like, seasons within seasons, like, for TVs that we're talking, like, all three of the shows that we're talking about have that kind of thing in common in them, that they're coupled together. But it's an elaboration on the actual premise, which I liked. I liked a lot. I liked it. I've always liked Alan Alda as a filmmaker. He made this movie in the mid-80s called Sweet Liberty. Have you ever seen this movie?
Nope.
It's about, like, these Hollywood, like, it's about how Hollywood takes over a, like, it's a very white movie, to say the least. Even when you hear the concept, you'll understand. It's about how Hollywood takes over this, this town, this, like, Massachusetts town, where there's a bunch of reenactors, And they're making a Revolutionary War movie. And it's how Alan Alda is like one of those guys. And he's like it's how he gets entangled with the production of this big Hollywood movie, and he falls in love with somebody, and it's a lot of fun. It's Alan Alda being Alan Alda. So like, I've always had I guess it's because my dad watched MASH. I had a lot of like, I've always always got to see Alan Alda films, and so yeah. What did you think of the show?
I loved it. I mean, I binged it in, well, I guess in 3 days is not really binging it, but I did make it through it in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And it's only 8 episodes, so it's an easy watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Except for the last episode, which I think is like, isn't it like 90 minutes or something? It was like 65 minutes or something like that. The final episode is
longer. It felt like it was at least an hour.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to get through in that last one. But I really, really enjoyed it. It's weird. I would kind of go back and forth on like who I hate to say side with, and because it's a lot of couple conflict, but it does a really good job of presenting the different aspects of like who is kind of may or may not be in the right and why they feel the way that they feel. Like, I think mm-hmm. it does a great job of that, and that like these arguments between couples aren't always as black and white as you want to believe that they are. And
absolutely,
like you're even yourself, like you're not all like, you might have a reason for why you feel the way you feel. That doesn't mean it's right. And I just thought it did a really, really good job of towing that line, especially with Will Forte and Tina Fey. Like, they're the one, they were my favorite of the couples, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept waiting for that to go really, really sour. And
mm-hmm.
they always found a way to kind of just, like, bring it back.
Yeah, they really did. Which, like, you know, I really did. It was interesting to watch the dynamic, because they're ostensibly the Alan Alda couple, right? And so they are the ones that you're kind of like at the center of, and I truly. Like, I liked their dynamic, especially because it was like neither one of them was right. And I think that that's what made me really like the whole situation of like in any of the couples, like every couple had their own POV, like you said, and nobody was right. Nobody was wrong. It just was like the way that couples go through life. And like, you know, you could relate to one, but not another. But that's okay, because as you move forward, there's always going to be something that you're going to watch. And you, like, there's never a time where you're, I hate to use the word bored, but it doesn't feel like it's inauthentic. If that's it, like more to the point, like I truly appreciated that, like, you know, these couples were like in their, I guess they would be in their early 50s to mid 50s. When we're watching this, and they're dealing with like real couple shit, right? And then it's like, you know, how they interact with like certain other couples groups is kind of fun, how they interact with people and how they think those dynamics change because of life changes. I don't want to ruin a lot of it, because I feel like it's the show that's best discovered and not be told about. But if you're okay with like if you're, I don't think that people in their 20s are going to relate to this. Like, they will, because of the one character that's in her 20s and 30s. But I don't know, like, if somebody's in their 30s, they could relate more to this. And the older you get, the more you can relate to this one. Just because it's not made for them. It's not made, it's like, it's not a Lana Condor rom-com, like all the, like the year that I turned prettier, you know, like I've seen, like Logan, I've seen at least 6 fucking rom-coms this year, and they're all garbage, flaming shit, social media influencer bullshit garbage.
Yeah.
Like, they're all like 2.5 hours long, and they all are fucking just, man, they're all about a list. They're all about these fucking lists. I don't get it, bro. Like, I am an old man now because I found this utterly charming and beautiful and emotionally resonant. And like every time a character that came on that was like sub 40, I was like, wow, they really kind of got them accurate, because, you know, nobody wants to fucking drink fucking mushroom coffee.
Yeah.
That's for goddamn sure.
Yeah. I really, those last two episodes were real, like kind of hit home as somebody who's, you know, but, well, both of us were, you know, entering our late 40s. You know, they're a little bit older, but it's still just like, I don't know. It does a really good job of like, life starts throwing these curveballs at you that you just, it's going to be shit you don't see coming and you can't prepare for. And for some people that starts happening when they're fucking 12, and that sucks. But, you know, just, it's, I don't know, it's like utterly charming is a good way to put it. And oddly emotional, but also really, really funny. I applaud Coleman Domingo's efforts to be in every single thing that he can possibly be in. he's fantastic, but like, God, man, like, does he get a break?
I don't think he does, but also, like, I don't think he wants to. I mean, he started directing. Like, you saw that he directed one of the episodes.
Yeah.
Hey, like, so I feel like, because, okay, so like, here's the thing. For so long, he was a guy that was in the periphery, right? He was in theater. And he was on the periphery, and then at around our age, he hits it big, right? And so a lot of these guys that hit it big are in their mid-40s. I mean, it's no different than, say, somebody like, I mean, I know it's a long time ago, and he's a completely different actor, but Charles Bronson, when he became a superstar, not, like, he'd always been a big actor, but when he got, Death Wish 2 was when he became a superstar, when, like, everybody was like, Bronson. And then he just started doing, like, he did, like, 40 movies in 10 years. Like, it's like that. Like, where you get this rush, and it's like, oh, I need to do as much as humanly possible. And luckily for him, he is such a welcome, like, his, like the kids say, his aura is so kind of immediately disarming, but also very, like, charming and, like, he's a guy that you want to be friends with. Like, instantly, his personality is such like that. Now, I mean, I've seen some shit that he's been in where, like, he plays an evil motherfucker, and it's like, whoa. But it's also, the nicest guys always play the worst people, right?
Well, I mean,
I can play the worst people.
It wasn't a great show for a lot of its run, but he was a pretty, like, pretty main character on Fear the Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. Yeah.
And it would go from like, oh, I really like this guy, I want to see what he's doing, to like, holy shit, this guy's the worst fucking human being possible, to like, oh, I kind of like this guy, to like, oh shit, I can't believe he just did that horrible thing. He's such a good actor, and I don't know if I've seen him in anything where he just got to be kind of this affable, like, guy, you know?
Probably the closest version to him as a human being, like, right? Like, as a gay man in love, like, that's just, like, existing in the world, right? Like, there, like, nothing else, like, I have not seen anything else like this, right? Like, there's been a couple of things, but, like you know, Sing Sing. I don't know if you've seen Sing Sing yet.
I haven't.
Like, it's very kind of like, I mean, he plays a prisoner, but like the context in which he plays the prisoner is kind of, there's a lot of empathy and there's a lot of sympathy and there's a lot about art and talking about art and stage, which he's very, very, like, the one thing that I've learned about him through interviews is that he's very passionate about the stage. Very much so, like, the Sing Sing. Sing Sing was something that he did specifically because he believes in that project. He was a part of that project. It's a, like, for people that don't know what Sing Sing is about, it's this movie about these prisoners in Sing Sing, the prison, who are part of a theater production, theater for the arts for prisoners. And it's how this program truly affects these men that have been incarcerated, some of them for life, and how transformative it can be for them. It's a very empathetic portrait. I strongly suggest anybody who feels that, like, anybody who, like, I think anybody could watch this movie. It's on HBO Max right now, actually. Has a beautiful transfer. It's a beautifully shot movie. It's 16mm. It's very great, gritty, but the message and the movie itself is just, it's fantastic. But yeah, like, he's great in the show. Like as the gay, like, they're not the token gay couple because they never feel like a token gay couple, right? But they definitely, like, he definitely has his moments of, like, you know, like, he's a normal guy. What I like is that he's not, like, his plight with his husband is what a lot of men do, which is, yeah, they cover up, they obscure, they lie about shit that they shouldn't be fucking lying about.
And it's not they don't pigeonhole it as this, like, gay specific thing. It's just that, you know, he's having health trouble and his husband is kind of smothering him, and in a way that he should be, like, you know, you got to take care of yourself. He's like, he's right, you know,
yeah.
But it's like, but also you're smothering me. So yeah, it's really, really good. I think as much as I loved Coleman Domingo, I think the kind of unsung hero of the show winds up being Kerry Kinney. Who is just fabulous, and she's so put upon in this and has to play it a little more stoic than probably most people are used to seeing her play anything. I feel like everybody mostly probably knows her from Reno 911, where it's just kind of, she just gets to be wild, you know?
Like, her moment in the islands,
yeah,
with the strawberry,
yeah,
holy shit, that is just so great. Like, she gets these moments where she's allowed to just have a look on her face, and the look conveys so much that you don't need to, like, you don't need anything more from her. She is so fantastic in this, and it's like, she's been in a lot of things. Like, she was in Superstore. I liked her in Superstore.
Yeah.
Two Broke Girls. Reno 911. But it seemed like a lot of it, like this is very much a shift for her. Kind of like the same, but only slightly, but kind of like in the same way that I feel like at first they kind of lean into the Steve Carell, like Steve Carell's character, Nick. They really lean into, like, certain aspects of his personality, but then it becomes this whole thing where, like, he gets to play a character that I feel like he really hasn't played before.
The closest is probably the way back.
Yes,
and he's very briefly in that. Like, it's significant, but I mean, he only gets maybe 10-12 minutes of screen time in that movie. So
yeah. But, like, his work, like, the most surprising work is his with Erica Henningsen, who plays his, like, I don't want to say much, but plays Ginny.
Yeah.
Again, because, like, I don't want to ruin the surprises that are built into the show. because there's a lot of stuff there that's like you know, very much so like embedded in the show, and you don't want to kind of, this is the kind of show that you want people to discover the funness of it is the where the unexpected turns take, the life turns that are taken in the show. And so a lot of it is kind of interesting. And the one question I do fucking have, dude, is, or the one statement I want to make is, so guys, just be prepared. This is a very rich white show. And as long as you can get over that, because I was making comments the entire time. I'm like, and then my wife started to, because as the season changed, they're like, so these motherfuckers get to take vacation every season.
Yeah.
And not just a little vacation, a big fucking like,
yeah,
like five figure vacation, guys. And so it's not like it happens a year later or 2 years later. It happens every season. It's like it takes place over a year. Yeah, that was kind of fucking wild. Well, the last one, I won't ruin anything, but so like, yeah, but
the last one's not necessarily, I mean, it is, but it turns but into it something else. But yeah, it is kind of that thing where when you watch shows like Friends or whatever now, and you're like, how do these people afford this? Like,
yeah,
what do they do? Because you don't get heavy into what they do for a living, really.
No.
So.
except for Coleman Domingo, who's like an architect, so you instantly know that he's making money.
Yeah.
So. Like him and then his boyfriend, I can't remember what his boyfriend makes does, but they both like are set in the way that you're like, oh, okay, they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But other than them, it's like, oh, okay, so you've got a house on like on the lake. Like that fucking Carell house was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
Dude. I'm like they fucking live there all the fucking time.
Look, that kiln blowing up.
Oh my god.
Floored me. Like, and they plant the seeds for that so well.
Oh, so perfectly, because you're like, oh, fuck. And bravo to Tina Fey. Like, literally, like, I always, like, you know, we always forget about her. And then she comes out with some shit, and she just kind of reaffirms that she is, like, she is one of the best and the brightest to ever come out of SNL. Like, just, like, hands down, like, everybody's giving love to John Mulaney nowadays, but let us not fucking, like, let us not forget that Tina Fey,
yeah,
like, did all this without being a drug addict and leaving her, leaving her wife. I'm being an asshole about John Mulaney, but, you know, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, I don't know, like, there's just something about it, like, I get really fucking rage yeah, appropriate.
He's really like, funny, but, like, it's, like, you're such a complicated person, man. Like, just
yeah,
so complicated to like you.
Exactly. And it's, like, people give Pete shit. Like, I'm always rooting for Pete. Because Pete can't help a lot of the demons he has. Like, John Mulaney is just a rich, white, elitist asshole that left his fucking wife after she was pregnant, got another woman pregnant, and also continues to have drug addiction problems. And it's like, just because he was an effete white asshole. And it's like, but everybody gives Pete shit for dating girls and, like, you know, having drug addiction that he has under control now. So much so he's like trying to change. He's like, he's been battered so badly that he's trying to change his image and going through and erasing all of his fucking tattoos.
Yeah.
But he's not the one on fucking Poker Face. Fuck. Well, maybe he is. No, he's not.
I haven't gotten to see any of this season. I know it just started. Oh,
dude, last night we watched the opening with Cynthia Erivo. Wow. That was a banger. Like, she doesn't play one, two, or three. You think that she plays three. She plays five different characters in this episode.
Oh wow.
It's like a, yeah, like I was like, so when I was watching it, I was like, what? Bob Doucet is editing this? I'm like, why is he? And then I was like, oh, Ryan is directing this? And I'm like, okay, well, obviously he probably wants, I mean, you know, he wants to set the tone, but then you find the concept out and you see all of the work that they had to do. It's a very showy show because it doesn't ever feel like it's an effect, even though they have like upwards of four Cynthia Erivos, all separate characters, all distinct characters, all on screen. It's like it sets the tone kind of perfectly, because you already know the concept and you already know everything. So it's like it's just an episode. Like I call it like an episode to play. Like it doesn't you know the concept, you know everything, but they do it in such a way that it's just like, okay, so we're just going to give you all the Cynthia Erivos and we're going to let her bounce off of Natasha Lyonne. And Natasha Lyonne is just like, give me all of the balls to juggle in the air because I can totally do this all day long. And it's like just fucking fun. It's a really great episode.
Stephanie has jumped on the bandwagon and has watched, I think, all of season one at this point. So I think we're going to watch that over the course of the weekend. So.
Yeah, and that's another one that had dropped three episodes, and I guess it's going to be dropping the three episodes per week until it finishes up. It's going to do a short season from everything that it sounds like. Which I'm kind of sad about, but I kind of not, because, like, I'm getting three episodes at a time. Please let me have, give me all of the episodes, right? Like, give me a month of three episodes that I can watch each week.
I'm not the biggest fan of the three episode thing, but mostly because there's so much TV to watch right now that I'm just like, I don't have time for all this. But and thankfully, maybe thankfully, I don't know, Andor is done. And so there will not be 3 hours of Star Wars that I have to watch going forward.
We've got next week we've got three more episodes.
Oh, is it three more? I thought we were done. I thought it was just nine episodes.
No, it's 12. It was 24. It was 12 and 12.
Okay. since I brought it up, I guess let's talk about Andor. I'm gonna go first just because I know that I'm on the opposite end of what most people think. This show bores me, man. Season one bored me. Season two has bored me even more.
I can see why, because it doubles down on everything. Like, it doubles down on everything that it is. And if you're not into it, it's a slog. Like, so, somebody told me that Andor is Star Wars for people that like Game of Thrones. But not Game of Thrones in the way, like, and then I kind of countered with, okay, so you're talking like this is Andor is Star Wars for people that like trade commission shit.
But
and he goes, yeah, that's exactly it.
Here's the thing, though, and this is less about me being bored with the show, and more about Star Wars fans and their toxicity. And this is not directed at you, even though we've had our debates about the prequels. Why is it when George makes movies about trade routes, people are like, this is bullshit? But when they make Andor, Tony Gilroy makes movies about, like, the politics behind, like, the Empire and the Rebellion. And 'cause you're mostly just getting that stuff. It's not a lot of, like, the best episodes in all three arcs so far are the third episodes. And I get that they're little mini movies and they're building up, but I am so bored for 2 hours or 90 minutes or whatever that, like, I'm just like, I just want to, I just get me to the third episode. Like, I'm so tired of people talking in rooms, and I guess if that stuff, like, excited me, but it reminds me of, God, what was that spy movie from, like, probably 10 or 12 years ago that was so freaking boring? I can't remember.
Oh, the one with,
Gary Oldman was in it, right?
Yeah, gosh, what is it? Tinker Tailor Soldier
Spy. Yes! Oh, my God. Yeah. I was so bored for 90% of that movie. Like, I was just like, what are people watching? Like, I guess if that espionage thing, that kind of espionage thing excites you, and I get that that's mostly what real espionage and spy work, like, I get that that's mostly what that is. But I'm just so bored. And, like, I don't know. I wish I was enjoying the show, and I am not.
I do too. I wish that you were enjoying it a little bit more. It's not like, okay, so, like, the thing that I've had to do, because the first season really kind of fucked with me because it was not what I was expecting. But now that I've kind of bent my expectations to, okay, so this is Tony Gilroy, like going, oh, well, you know, Rogue One was okay, but it was a Star Wars movie. This is what I really wanted to do, which is make a critique of fascism. And, okay, I mean, like, the thing is that you're right. Every third episode, it's Star Wars adjacent, because we get the pop, right? We finally get the pop. It's all the build up to, and now I understand why they released it in three episode couplets, because they're designed as three episode couplets, right? They're like, they shouldn't even have called them episodes 1, 2, and 3. I know why they did it, because they're to show it on fucking their TV shows, their linear TV stations and shit. But realistically, these are kind of like Sherlock. They're 90-minute episodes. And yeah. I would have more respect for them if they had made them 90-minute movies or two-hour movies, right? Because, fuck, the big thing that I was just fucking done with is get over the fucking wedding. I'm done with this. This has nothing to do with
anything. In the first arc, yes. God, Jesus, man.
Fucking Christ. I'm done with it. Get over Gorman. Because I knew that they were going to...
Yeah, I get that, like, what they were saying of, like, using, like, having to use your family in a political play, having to, like, throw a wedding and also be this rebel spy. Like, I get that juxtaposition thing that they're going for, but, yeah, I'm with you. We needed... this, like, it's so much, and
I was done with it. Like, I was like, you gave me no, like, if you gave me, like, the daughter, like, if the daughter, like, okay, that's why I kind of called it, like, that's why my friend called it Game of Thrones adjacent, because it was like, literally, it was like, this is like Joffrey's wedding, but I have no context that this little fucking Nazi shit is gonna be a terrible husband. Like, this is not, like, you know, but it's the same context, right? And then it's, like, certain things are happening. Like, that movie is shit. Like, I cannot, like, if I reapproach this, that's a series of episodes I will not be watching.
And there's pieces of it that really, really work. Like, I thought this whole thing of, like, and she mentions it in this last batch of episodes. Her childhood friend, like, them basically having to assassinate this guy, and we don't get to see it. But
no, but we know what's happening, right? Like, because the girl's girlfriend shows up, I like the fact that Lupin is the worst person in the in the Rebels.
He is.
We know that he's gonna.
He's terrible, but also so is Forrest Whitaker's character. Like,
oh God, Saw?
These are terrible people, man.
Yes. Well, like, and then you know that Luthen's gonna get his just desserts. Like, you know that, like, that's why I'm like the last episodes. Like, I was like,
and
there's
he knows it too. Like, he tells Cassian, he's like, they're gonna hang us all. Like, I'm not. I don't think I'm getting out of this. You know.
Yeah.
So, get her. She's more important. You need to get her. I will stay here and hang.
Yeah. It's like there's a lot going on that's very interesting in the show. Like once you get past that wedding, I like the show. Like this season has been a lot better, but also they made it very apparent that these are I like the time jumps. I like that I think that they thought they were gonna do one thing because like this is a very different like I feel like this is a very different show in season two than it was in season one. Season one feels very ruminous, very kind of like kicking the dirt and looking at it kind of shit. Like, I mean, we have a whole episode, like with the exception, and I think that this is where they took it from, was when Cassian gets put in prison. Those three episodes are fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And they understood, oh my God, we can make these mini movies. Let's go ahead and do that and tell the important stuff and jump time because they very much like, and here's the thing. Not all Star Wars fans know what BBY means. Gotta explain that shit to people.
Yeah.
Tell them it's the before Battle of Yavin so that we know and tell, like when you show Cassian crash or land, tell them that we're at Yavin because that's where we are. Like it's all this weird shit that it's like, oh, let's go ahead and not tell anybody and be smart about this, but you're not really. And then let's go ahead and be very obvious about other things that you don't need to be obvious about. But these last two sets of episodes, the Gorman stuff and like, you know, the Gorman stuff and then now the Senate stuff, like, this is like, this is good. Like, I really like this. I'm enjoying this. I wish they'd gotten to K2SO sooner, but I knew that that wasn't going to happen. I knew that wasn't going to happen until the last bits of the
That is one thing that, like, because I was looking forward to K2SO, and knowing that there are now three more episodes, because I really thought that that was the last of it. I'm like, oh, good, we're actually going to get to see K2SO. That's great. I just hope that it's, I wasn't completely bored by the Gorman stuff, but I don't know. It's just.
I'm going to say this much. I really like the Gorman stuff because we're now getting, like, that was the stuff that I want. I want context to things that I've either heard or they've referenced multiple times in other shows. Like, it's been mentioned in Rebels more than two or three times. It was, so you telling me about that, I kind of need to know what that means,
yeah,
right? And so giving me that and showing me the horrendousness of it, like, we kind of knew, but filling in those gaps, I'm okay with. Like, I really am, right? Like, seeing how Mon Mothma had to go into hiding, that is also, and the reasons why she did, like, that is also something that I kind of like I like to see, like, the reason why Cassian is who he is, we kind of got it summed up in the last couple of episodes, like, the reason why he's, like, more of an assassin than anything else is that he put, like, him and Lupin put himself into this position, right? Like, there's this whole thing of, like, I made choices. I make my own choices. You did, but it also cost you, like, you're going to be this person, right? That's going to die in the shadows. And that's the saddest, like, to me, the most, the most wonderful aspect of this is the whole thing with him and Bix. And I was wondering how they were going to do it, right? Like, how they were going to separate them. And I thought that they were going to do it the very cliched way of, like, she was going to die, right? Or, like, you know, but it wasn't. She just kind of moved away. She's like, I can't do this with you. Like, I'm going to make the decision for you because you'll never give up. You'll always want this. And, like, you know, we already know how that ends. We already know how that ends. So, like, it being a not cliche, but a cliche kind of thing is kind of great because we're getting to the stuff. We're finally getting to the meat of what made Cassian the person he was that goes up to his contact and literally shoots him in cold blood. Like, I thought that that was the whole purpose of this show. And the only time, like, the only time I feel like character building is happening in the first season is during the prison. Like, the vacation that he takes because he's so on edge and he doesn't know, like, he doesn't know what he wants to do. And then going to prison, finding out what the Empire is doing, and so all of a sudden starting to have purpose, right? But then the rest of it is kind of like, meh. And then at least in this series, it's kind of like, with the exception of the wedding, you're like, you know, it's all like, you know, it's becoming about this whole, like, how did Cassian get shaped?
I was pretty fed up with the idiots in the first three episodes. I got pretty tired of that pretty quick. Like, it's funny, and I get what they're saying, but everything gets dragged out for three episodes, and that's what's frustrating to me. And it was frustrating about the first season too, is the slowness of it all, and I hate that because it's very well acted. It's so beautiful. Like, I wish that all the other Star Wars we've gotten looked as good as this Star Wars.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the dialogue is fantastic. I wish that Tony Gilroy had been around in the late 90s, early 2000s, and had been in this universe, and George had just been like, here's the script, can you punch this up? Because we wouldn't have the conversations about the prequels that we have, because a big part of that is like, this dialogue is atrocious. Like, you know, having just recently went to the theater and watched Revenge of the Sith on the big screen again, it is bad. The dialogue is so bad. But
It really is.
I don't know. Like, I don't want to dislike this show because I like so much about the show. It's just so boring to me. And I know that's such a, like, base complaint about something, but I'm bored by it.
But, like your complaints are valid. Like I said, like, I would, like, we were like, when is this fucking wedding gonna end?
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, and to your point, it's like, when you can't bring, if you can't bring any kind of narrative drama to this wedding that's supposedly super important and kind of sets the table, like, I don't know, man. Like, I then that means that you're kind of like, your critics are fucking, like, basically telling you that, like, you know, your critics are pretty much right on.
It's the kind of thing that, like, had we seen it in the Clone Wars, this would have been, well, if it had been three episodes, I would have been 22 minutes apiece.
Yeah.
So it still would have only been an hour. But it's the kind of thing that they would have covered in a 22-minute episode. Like, they would have moved at a faster clip. And maybe that's part of it. You know, for most of Star Wars existence, and I mean this George's words, faster, more intense. That's his mm-hmm. that's his thing. You know, do it faster, do it more intense. Let's keep moving. And this is not a show that keeps moving. It slows everything down to a pace that is glacial in Star Wars.
I will. Okay, so I am going to make a comment, and like one thing that I'm going to say that Tony Gilroy added, and I know it was scheduling conflicts, but
I was going to bring this
Christ,
up.
Why didn't we get Benjamin Bratt as Bail Organa?
I love Jimmy Smith. I love Jimmy Smith. Benjamin Bratt is next level, like acting wise.
I want him in everything. I want them to digitally, like, I hate
reshoot Benjamin those scenes and just put Benjamin Bratt in it.
Absolutely. And then have him redo all of the Clone Wars and have him do that shit. Like, because I'm sorry, dude, but I mean, like, I'm a fucking, okay, this is how far back I go with Benjamin Bratt. I fuck with Benjamin Bratt back with Blood In, Blood Out. That's my fucking jam. That's how long I've loved Benjamin Bratt as a, like, I mean, his, like, he's the man. And fucking to see him in this, and it's like, he's only in, like, three scenes, but you feel that he's Bail Organa, right? Like, yeah. It feels like, it doesn't feel like, I love Jimmy Smith, and he's a great actor, and, like, you know, all love to him, but like he always feels like he's lowering himself in Star Wars. It's like, oh, I'm Jimmy Smith, I'm Bail Organa, but you know, you ain't giving me a lot of lines, so I'm gonna only give you half measures. Like he's literally like Jimmy's like Benjamin Bratt is just giving it everything in this show. Like the moment that he comes on and he tells he has that moment with Mon Mothma, you're like. Like, the first one, where it's only, like, 2 seconds, you're like, oh, shit, that's fucking Bail Organa. Like, I could see that this is a senator. This is a guy who fucking eventually ends up, like, you know, standing up for, like, all of the good that's in, like, you know, that's, like, he is one of the main, like, architects of the rebellion. And with Jimmy Smith, it feels a little bit, he feels a little bit more like a rich senator. Whereas, yeah. Like, Benjamin Bratt feels like that lean and hungry, like, I'm gonna be in the jungle with my boys, and I'm gonna be fucking shooting Imperial guards, or, yeah. Like, Imperial stormtroopers. So, that I really loved. Like, I love that wholeheartedly, and I hope we get more of him in the last three episodes.
Yeah, me too. I really, really was shocked. I read about the recasting before I got a chance to watch the episodes, and so yeah, when he showed up, I was prepared to just be like, whatever, man. And what wound up happening was me going like, oh shit, yeah, Benjamin Bratt's got it, man.
I mean, he knows how to do Star Wars, right? Like, if this motherfucker shows up in The Mandalorian and Grogu, like, I'm not mad at it. Like, you know, like, it's weird because there's some people that really know how to do Star Wars, and there's some people that don't. Like, I will say, given Diego Luna the right context, he knows how to do Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like him and, what's her name? Adriana, I can't think of her last name, but the actress that plays Bix, like, they know how to do Star Wars, right? Like, there are certain people that know how to do it. Like, even, like, what's his name? Stellan Skarsgård. Idra Adroha. Adrona. Adronia. But, like, Stellan Skarsgård. Man, like, imagine if he had gotten to play a Sith Lord. Like, he's great as Lupin, like, as this great...
Every rebel. Actor in the show is fantastic. Yeah. The guy that plays Cyril, I think he's so good. and he's doing exactly, like, it's pitch perfect. I was a little upset when he died at the end of the, yeah, I was like, oh shit, they killed Cyril. But there's also the, like, the moment between him and Cassian, like, he knows who Cassian is. And Cassian's like, I don't know, like, who the fuck you are. Like, who are you?
Who are you? Who are you? Like, and then, like, I mean, well, but then you got Deidre, like, and her moment. Jesus Christ, like, you, we've never, like, there are moments in this show that Tony and Dan Gilroy give these characters that absolutely are, like, heightened Star Wars moments, but they're, like, moments that are so artful. Like, when she finds out that Cyril is dead and she's in that little small box, she's by herself. Like, Denise Go, who's, like, who plays Deidre, like, that moment of breakdown but control is fucking heartbreaking. Like, even though you
and that's her, coming off them having a moment together where he begins to understand, like, that while she may care about him in some form or fashion, she has been using him the entire time.
Yep.
And
the entire time,
like, him coming unglued, so good,
so fucking good. The Kyle Soler, like, he had the moment of the fucking season. And it was, like, relatable Star Wars stuff, where Deidre and his mom are fighting, and he goes, excuse me.
It might be the single funniest moment in Star Wars.
Oh, my God. So hilarious, because he's literally sitting there. And, like, it's a weird thing, because it's, like, a super complicated relationship, because you hate what Deidre is doing, even though she knows, like, the problem is that she knows it's fucking wrong. From the moment Orson Krennic, who, like, if there's one thing that season two does, is make him, like, even worse than he already is, right?
Yeah.
Like, we already think that he's a piece of shit, right? But it doubles down on that shit during that meeting, right? Where they're just basically going to take this...
Like, how can we frame this so that we have the people's backing to go into Gorman and just demolish it and just take everything we want, and like, all of that is just it's great. Oh, sorry, my dog decided that, come on, I swear, that she wanted to join us. How do we use the propaganda, and it was just it's brilliant writing. I love those scenes. There's a lot I do really, really love in the show. It's just ultimately I wind up being bored.
The big one that we should shout out, and this goes back to the creator George Lucas, how great is the four, like, it's on par with Ian McDiarmid getting cast 30 years before he needed to be, like, purposely used. Is Genevieve O'Reilly getting casted, cut from fucking Revenge of the Sith, but then somehow magically they brought her back, and she is literally a cornerstone of this next generation of Star Wars.
Like,
there's a part of me that really would love them to re-edit Revenge of the Sith and add her scenes in just to give it further context and continuity, because she is that fucking good. Like, even in the wedding scenes, I may have not liked the wedding scenes, but she is fantastic. Like, what she is doing.
Yeah. I know I said it, but, like, I don't think, as much as I'm not loving the show, I don't think anybody on screen is ever doing a bad job. But yeah, she's fantastic. I mean, she completely sells all of the emotion that she's supposed to be selling, the doubt of everything, just like, is this going to be worth it?
I, absolutely. And like this last episode, the final episode, like the episode 9, like the last episode of this trilogy of episodes, like the way that she plays everything, like stress is a really hard thing to portray on screen, right? Like the stress of like something that you're having to do, that like that whole like overnight, like she could be killed, like what's going to happen, do I have the courage to do what I need to do, like it's like a showcase for her because she's fantastic. They give her like they give her everything, and I like that goes to like I'm gonna shout out Tony Gilroy and the Gilroys, because there's three Gilroys. There's Tony Gilroy, Dan Gilroy, and then the unsung hero who's the editor of Andor, John Gilroy. I'm gonna shout out John Gilroy because the editing in this last episode is fucking fantastic, because we know that Mon Mothma gets away. We know it. But that entire episode kept me so tense. It was so kind of like edge of your seat in how they did it. Like that final moment of like, what's your guy's name? What's his name? And then he shoots the Imperial, the ISB officer.
Yeah.
Her, like, dude, up until the last minute, I'm like, is Cassian going to get shot? Are they going to have some kind of like additional thing in prison? Because like the editing is so sharp in that, like, the editing, like in the three episodes, in the final episodes, are always super sharp. It's like, it's almost like it's a buildup. And that's why I kind of wanted it to be like a movie rather than like four separate movies rather than episodes, because it feels like you lose something. Like, yeah. It feels like they're building, but you can't really tell because there's credits in between. I don't know. It's like that editing in that final episode is super fantastic. And John Gilroy, who like is, they're all three brothers. Like, can you imagine? Like, you have to like kind of like give it up to them, right? Like, Dan and Tony are writers and directors, but then John is an editor, and he's edited everything that they did. Like, Tony did one of my favorite movies of the early of the late 2000s, which is Michael Clayton. His brother edited it, and I think that a lot of like how good that movie is the editing. I would love to see them take on a Star Wars movie where they had to tell a compact story and they didn't have such a leisurely amount of time.
Yeah.
Because 9 hours, like what is it going to be, end up being like 4 hours or 5 hours of Star Wars is a lot of Star Wars. And to have it as ruminous as it is, I will give you that. Like, having it as ruminous as it is feels like it takes the steam out of everything. Like, it doesn't feel like meetings mean anything. They're just like, oh, let's have these meetings.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah.
It's,
we'll see where it goes in the final three.
I'm hopeful that maybe it'll bring me around, because the end of season one, I really did enjoy the end of season one of Andor. I thought they did a really good job there. So we'll see. We did have some other Star Wars stuff that dropped this week. I unfortunately have not seen the Cad Bane episodes, but I have seen the Asajj Ventress episodes.
Okay. That's going to be a very interesting conversation, I feel like the Cad Bane episodes are the weakest episodes.
That's what I've heard. I almost started with the Cad Bane because I'm such a fan of that character.
Fan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I had heard that those were the weakest of the episodes. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to watch them, you know, as they're ordered. So I watched the Asajj Ventress episodes, and then unfortunately I was just exhausted, so I didn't get to see the Cad Bane episodes. I thought the Ventress episodes, they were fantastic. I'm drawing a blank on her name, who does the voice of Asajj, Nika Kelly or something like that.
Yeah. I can tell you that right now.
She's just so good, and
she really is.
She has that thing that is perfect for Star Wars, where it's like this dryness to her wit, almost like the jokes aren't really funny. Like, it's kind of dad jokey, you know, when she makes those little punny lines. But she's so menacing that, like, just the little showdown with her and the kid in that little shop with the people that were looking for him. I don't know. I was like, coming off of watching Andor all week and watching those three episodes, I was like, yeah, this is Star Wars. This is what I want from Star Wars. I love this.
absolutely. Okay, so the problem... I have to kind of talk about both of them because they're so in opposites. So what the problem for me... Okay, I'll start with the problem for me with the Cad Bane stuff is that... It's the first time I feel like Dave's very specific, like, predilections towards certain things got in the way of telling stories. His Western, like, Eastwood, Dollars Trilogy kind of, like, fetishizing of Cad Bane got in the way of the storytelling, and it's good, it's just, it's not great, because you can see everything that's going to happen way ahead of it, whereas, like, the Asajj Ventress stuff is, like, it's so in line with the Clone Wars, and where we ended with Asajj Ventress, I mean, so much so that we like, literally pick up where we left off with Asajj, right?
Yeah.
Like, we see the final thing that happens. We know what's happened. We have the context for it. And it's almost like they're giving us a spinoff series. It's almost like they are wanting, like, they gave us two options for a spinoff series, and I want the Asajj Ventress one, and I don't want the Cad Bane. The reason why is because it's so much like an Eastwood film that it's like,
Cad Bane is on the let's see, what's my go-to, the Dr. Dre, where it's like, yeah man, it's, you're awesome when you show up on other people's stuff, but
yes, by yourself it's like,
it's a little like, you need the more, you need the drop in. You don't need the him to be the main focus, though.
Absolutely. So, like, okay, so I'm gonna give you an example. Like, you know how, like, they've already done the Outlaw Josie Wales with Cad Bane?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they had the episode where he's playing basically Josie Wales. This is the dollar, like, this is for a few dollars more. But instead of playing the Eastwood character, he's playing the Lee Van Cleef character, which he's always been. But it's like they've always leaned into the Eastwood of it, and they give you the origin story of Cad Bane. Like, they give you, like, basically the street rat that turns into the outlaw that turns into finally Cad Bane and why he is the way he is. But it's done in such a, like, it's so kind of fetishistic.
I am not looking forward to that. I am... Absolutely, and have been for, I mean, honestly, maybe because of Star Wars, I am over the let's give the villain his backstory, his sympathetic, you know, like, woe is me, can't, like, no wonder this kid turned bad backstory. It's such a thing now, and
yeah.
I'm just... Even when it's well done, I'm like, I don't care. Let him, can't the bad guy just be the bad guy, man? Like, it's like, I don't need a Hans Gruber origin story where we find out that, like, his dad beat him and he was locked in the closet and like, okay, that
that
sucks.
Series they're working on.
Yeah.
You know that that's a Hulu series they're working on, dude. Fuck, man. It's so bad, but you're right. Like, I don't need that. I need adventures. Like, and that's what they did with Asajj Ventress. Is that, like, I mean, as you know, like, so, like, let's talk about the Asajj Ventress of it all. Like, I feel like, that was the pilot episode for, like, Asajj and the kid going on adventures. Like, if you give me that, if you give me Asajj Ventress, or just call it Ventress, right? And you give me that particular show, like, in post, like, you know, in the same era that Bad Batch is in, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's really, like, real, like, we don't know how long she's been dead for and she got revived, but it's almost, like, instantaneous, right?
Yeah. It's definitely not long. I mean, it's long enough that most of the Jedi are probably wiped out.
Yeah, like, the Order 66 has been, like, I mean, like, that's the thing, that we know that Order 66 is definitely in play, and, but, like, the whole framing of it of, like, you know, like, you know, like, we know Quinlan Voss and her had a thing, right?
Yeah.
And she goes, and it's like, the Night Sisters revive her with this whole thing of, like, you can never be happy. But we're gonna revive you, and I mean, it's almost like she goes and she almost wants to do it, right? But she doesn't. She doesn't go to see Quinlan Voss, even though it's like kind of like it's unspoken that he's the love of her life. But then they set this up to where it's like they all like you know, they have this adventure, this Padawan, this Force user, this young Force user, and her like go on this adventure.
I mean, it is when she looks at him and she's like, I'm not a Jedi. I was Count Dooku's assassin. Like, I've been trained in the dark side. I probably killed people that you know and loved. And, like, I don't know. I'm like, this is what I've been missing.
And, like, the thing is that she, like, I kind of love the fact that they set everything up. They set everything up for a show that would be extremely interesting.
Yeah.
Like, extremely interesting. And also, like, the story is very kind of Clone Wars. I mean, think about it. Like, the way that they buck the conventions of, like, you think it, like, it's this one thing about these two opposing forces, and then it's how, like, ultimately the Jedi ideals come to play of communication, like, peacekeeping, what ultimately the Jedi should, like, at their best, their ideals stand for, come into play. And, like, this little, like, this action little skirmish thing gets resolved by both of them because of the way that they work together very kind of tenuously. And I really like, because it kind of itched the Clone Wars itch, like it scratched the Clone Wars itch, it very much so for me was like, oh yeah, this is what I fucking want.
Yeah,
I really want this. So yeah, like I really hope that Dave, like, I hope that Dave goes with this. Like, it feels like it's something that Dave definitely, like, the writing quality dips for me. And that's ultimately where I'm like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, the Cad Bane stuff was the stuff I was looking forward to. But, and that, because then after I, like, you know, I mean, watched him in order, right? I was like, okay, I'll watch Asajj Ventress. And then it was so good. That was so juicy and good. Like,
yeah, action. You wind up setting yourself up for disappointment.
Very much so. And that's what happened, was that I very much, like, it's not bad. because, like, when they're telling the street urchin story, it very much reminds me of all of the stuff that we've seen from the Star Wars Underworld pilot stuff.
Yeah.
And also, like, it also reminded me a lot of the Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, one of my favorite storylines where Obi-Wan Kenobi goes undercover, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, as the gangster.
That's a good storyline.
Yeah, that is a really good storyline. And it kind of reminded, because it's also, Cad Bane is also in that one, too. Yep. It kind of reminded me of that, but I don't know, man. Like, it just, there's something about it that just feels, like, very recycled from the Clint Eastwood playbook that I'm just like, okay, I don't know. Like, if you get, like, yeah. Like, Cad Bane is, like you said, Cad Bane is like Dre. He's a better feature artist than he is on an entire album.
Yeah.
And you can't hang a whole, like, if you hung a whole series on it, I would watch it, but
yeah, I don't know how much I'd enjoy it. Exactly. I'm probably going to get to those today, so I'll circle back around and let you know what I think next week. But yeah, it's an up and down week for Star Wars for me, which is really a damn shame. I do want to bring up, we haven't talked much about, like, reading stuff in a while, but there is a current Star Wars series called Legacy of Vader that Marvel's publishing that is so fucking good that it's retroactively making me not like, but kind of appreciate some of the sequel stuff. So,
so what's the concept?
It is what happens with Kylo Ren, the journey that he goes on post killing, his father. And how he's trying to reconnect with his grandfather. And, yeah. And it's, I can't say too much about it. I don't want to say too much about it. It's not wrapped up yet. I think issue 5 just hit. Maybe 4. But I don't know. It's making me want, like, a Kylo Ren solo film.
Interesting. Okay.
So that was definitely a highlight, especially coming off seeing Revenge of the Sith in theaters again. Like, sitting down and reading a large chunk of that, I was like, oh shit. Like, Kylo Ren, man, that's an interesting character that, I feel like the first two movies keep him interesting. It really is that fucking Rise of Skywalker that just completely shits the bed on everything.
Well, yeah, let's make him a good guy. Let's make him a misunderstood guy when, like you have to bring back, like, Harrison Ford in, like, ghost form and go, I'm sorry. And, like, can we just talk about that scene for a second where, like, Harrison Ford looks like he's about to throw up, or he's sick, or he's, like, deathly ill? Like, I'm like, what is going on here? But, like, it was, like, that movie is so fucking just wildly fucking inappropriate, like, in every way, shape, or form. Like you don't take a beloved, you don't kill a beloved character and then get, like, and then one movie later you get to, like, become the hero. Like, no. Like, keep him bad.
Yeah.
Like, here's my thing. Like, and I hate that we have to I have to rehash this, but, like, you diminish Rey, not just by calling her a Skywalker, but by not having her be, like, if she's truly the chosen one, then she should have been able to beat Kylo Ren and the Emperor, right? Like, and how badass would that have been if she was able to beat both of them in the final movie? Something that no other Jedi could do. Like, they all, like, there was always, like, a team up, right? But if you had changed the narrative, like, how much more of a legend and more of like a complete, like she was the chosen one the whole time. And, you know, like, I don't know, man, like, it's just like that movie is such a fucking, just a mess of a movie that just kind of creates more problems than it's worth. But yeah, this sounds interesting. Like, I like the concept, and it's weird because it's like a lot of like the Star Wars comics that I've read really do kind of like they do the same thing that like a lot of the projects, like the live action projects, have been doing, which is something I don't know if I agree with or not, which is filling up the holes,
yeah,
of the various areas. Like I was going to ask you about this because like you're a big comic book you've read a lot of the comics. I've read all of the run of Star Wars, like the one that just is Star Wars and Vader and Dr. Aphra, right? And all of them are just like they get close to telling new stuff, but they just fill in the gaps right before things happen.
Well,
right?
You will be sad to hear that they fill the gap in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. They did, yes. That was the first run of Star Wars and Vader.
Star Wars. Yeah.
And the second run fills in between Empire and Jedi, which is a largely unexplored Star Wars area. It mm-hmm. winds up not being fantastic. The Vader book in that era is good. That almost anything yes, with Vader on it is good. But the regular Star Wars stuff kind of takes a huge dip in quality, maybe because they don't have Han Solo. And now they're relaunching it again, and it's going to be filling the gap between Return of the Jedi and what we know of right before Force Awakens. Like, there obviously there's some other stuff that's already told stories in that era, but like yeah. what's going on with those characters is mostly unexplored in the comics for sure. I know there's some novels, so yeah, they're still just doing filling in the gaps. I don't have a problem with that, but it does really lessen the kinds of stories you can tell.
That's my thing, is like, I don't know, man, like is it just me, or is it like they're just treading water? Because that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I feel like once you establish in almost any medium, once you establish like a specific canon for these sets of characters, except for the beginning and the final stories, everything you do is just treading water. Comic books in general, that's what you're doing. It's
yeah.
You have to get to the outside edges of things when you can find stories that are new. Even with characters that you love, like, you have to be willing to step out of the continuity of it all to get to something new and really, truly enjoyable. It's the older I get, the rarer it is that I find, like, in-continuity stories to be genuinely engaging. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you can't do anything real because this character has to go on. Like, you can maybe think that they're dead. I mean, as much as I appreciate resurrecting Asajj Ventress, I mean, she gets a final arc. I think it's in that book. It's her and there's a novel about Ventress and
just called Ventress.
Yeah. And you know, that's where their whole romance comes from, and mm-hmm. she gets an end, and you're like, oh shit, like, we want to do something else with this character. We got to find a way to bring her back. it's all just kind of treading water. So there will be stories that I'm like, this is really interesting. And most of the time, it's just like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's the adventures of Luke and Leia, and, you know. So maybe with this new era, like telling post Jedi stuff might be kind of interesting, because we have some stories, but not a lot, like I said. Especially yeah. not with Luke and Leia and Han. So, I don't know. I'm way more interested in exploring Kylo Ren. Honestly, I'd be kind of interested in exploring, like, the Emperor and, like, how all of that comes back around.
Yeah, like, all of the stuff that Bad Batch was working on.
Yeah.
That was filling in gaps. Like, all of the projects that he worked, that he was working on to get the resurrection. To get to the resurrection.
Boy, they've once they really leaned into that, like, oh, he's Space Hitler. Like, it was...
Yeah. Seriously, dude. Like, it was pretty fucking... Yeah. I kind of want... Like, there's a lot of, like, I want it to be outside of the, I kind of want it to be outside of the trilogies now. Like, I just kind of want storytelling. Like, what excites me the most about Sean Levy's, like, Star Wars movie is not just because it's a story that's being told that's basically he's made it clear. In everything that he said, that it's just a story, it's a contained story, right? But it's also told outside of.
Well, I mean,
like, it's outside the trilogy.
Let's be perfectly honest. As much as we've enjoyed The Mandalorian, the further The Mandalorian, the closer The Mandalorian got to being part of OG kind of Star Wars stuff, the worse that show became. Like, it got lesser the closer it was to the continuity. It excelled when it was out on those outer rim, like, mm-hmm. things, where it's like, yeah, it's part of Star Wars, but it, you know, we're not dealing with the Jedi, we're not dealing with the Sith, we're not dealing, you know, like, remnants of the Empire, you know, we're just, mm-hmm. we're seeing fringe stuff, not deep, you know, continuity stuff. And the closer it got to that, the worse the show became.
Yep. And like, that's kind of what I want, is like, I wanted away from, like, I literally wanted away from that particular,
yep,
that particular set, because it's narratively inert. Like, that's the problem for me, is that everything I watch, like, Star Wars wise feels narratively inert. Like you said, it's like comic books. Once you've established continuity, and like, it's like the X-Men, right? Like, the X-Men are always facing something. Somebody always dies, but they always bring them back.
Yep.
Like, always bring them back. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, like, what the hell, dude? Like, nobody dies. It's a soap opera. Like, everybody finds their way back, and it's like, I want there to be real consequences, right? Like, I want there to be, like, and this goes to, like, you talking about, like, fringes, right? Like, and so, like, you know, like, I love Star Wars, but if I'm really honest with you, like, I mean, yeah, Star Wars is great, but, you know, there are other things that, like, you know, there's other things that I've, like, and it's more towards the writing, like, the written word, right? There's written word stuff that's just as epic as Star Wars, but does it better, because there are real consequences to what has been done and said in that medium, right? And it's like, because they're telling us, like, a definitive story. And I feel like, I don't know, like, Star Wars I love, and I love watching it, but
I think that's why I enjoyed Skeleton Crew so much, was because what we're talking about was like, oh, I, like, it's part of that, but it's not deep focus, like, oh, here's how all of this ties into, like, the Empire, or the Jedi, or the Sith, or it's just like, oh, it's just an adventure story. Like, this is fun. It's probably why we enjoyed Clone Wars, you know, so much, because even though that is Empire, Jedi, Sith, like, all of those things were, you got so many varied kinds of stories in that, that, you know, you could kind of just like, oh, okay, well, if I'm not loving this one, I just wait 2 weeks and I'll have a new adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. And they filled it always with things that had consequences, but they weren't ever too, like, main characters' consequences, right? Like, there were and they weren't. Like my biggest thing is, like, you know, the Jar Jar storyline, where it's like, it affected him and it changed your concept of him, but nothing happened to him. It was, or the Duchess Satine, like, they used that particular concept very well, right? Like, and I, like, you know, Dave doing Star Wars, like, he does Star Wars better than anybody else, because, like, you know, like, main characters don't change, but they do, your focus changes of them, but there's always consequence.
Yeah,
there's always kind of like something there that ends some way badly, but always manages to, like, you know, always manages to be finite, but continue on the main story. And I like that. It's just that we're not getting that, like, we're, like you said, like, we're, I don't know if we're in just a little bit of a lull because we don't have an animated series. Like, and to be quite honest, animation has always carried, like, since the end of Revenge, like, since Revenge, and we became, like, you know, like, we know because we were there for the Dark Times, right? The Clone Wars. Like, what people think is the Dark Times was, like, actually pretty exciting for us. Like, yeah, I mean, we, like, I'll be honest, like, that first season I really didn't like, and I had a really big problem with a lot of the way that it was told, but as soon as they got to the second season, they kind of made some really major adjustments to things, and it started to sing, like, in a big way, right? Yeah. And we got, I mean, I still contend that Clone Wars is probably the best Star Wars we got. Like, you know, because of what it did and how much it meant to me during that time, where we were getting Star Wars, but we were getting, like, books and comic books, and we weren't getting a actual, like, visual representation, which that was it. You know, so much so that it carried over, like, it's like, you know, I know all of the visual stuff carried over, but they could have very not well had done that, right? They could have just said Clone Wars was persona non grata. Which reminds me, I'm probably gonna have to rewatch it again. Like, I just have this itching to watch, like, I just finished, I didn't even tell you, I rewatched The Bad Batch, and I did it in, like, 3 weeks. Like, it was easy, right? Like, a couple of, like, 5-episode stints and a couple of days off. But it just got me itching because, like, the beginning is, like, very much Clone Wars adjacent, right? And so it got me really wanting to revisit Clone Wars. So I think I'm actually going to do a revisit of the 120 episodes we have of Clone Wars.
You can skip those Meeber Gascon episodes. So
my God,
make it like 116 episodes.
Jesus. I mean, just, yeah. But the Jar Jar stuff has to stay, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. It's so good. So, yeah. But what are we talking about next week, man?
Final Destination, right? Are you going to go see it?
Yeah, but I'm not going to be able to see it till the weekend.
Oh, okay.
Because wifey wants to see it.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, she's a poor fan. That's the problem nowadays, right? But we can always talk offline about scheduling and stuff. But yeah, no, absolutely. Final Destination. I'm hyped. We finished the first two. Watching the first two.
Yeah, I kind of want to do a rewatch, but I doubt we'll have time. The plan is I'm going to go see that. I'm going to try not to murder my dog. Hush. I'm almost done.
We'll have
by then. Yeah, we'll definitely be talking about Poker Face. So, because we'll catch up on that this weekend. So, but yeah, that's I don't know. I don't think I have anything else other than Poker Face and Final Destination on my. And, well, we'll have the last batch of Andor episodes too. So,
yes, we will.
So, yeah, well, if we record before Final Destination, we'll still have plenty to talk about. So,
okay.
But yeah, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. My dog has decided it's time to end the podcast. and go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieL.com, where we've got a bunch of stuff posting right now. A lot of 4K content. I just posted back, like, literally as we're recording this, two Jason movies, two Friday the 13th movies, Jason X and Jason Goes to Hell, are both on 4K, and they just got released by Arrow Video, and I just posted massive reviews of both of them, because they're massive sets. I was genuinely shocked at how many special features are for both of those movies. And if you don't know what Jason X is, that's Jason in space. One of my favorites.
I'm with you there. Jason X, like, it's not a well-made movie, but it is such an insanely fun concept, and has, I haven't rewatched the Jason movies in a while, but the fact that this moment sticks with me to this day, and I haven't seen that movie since I saw it in theaters, I don't think. Maybe once on DVD. It has one of my favorite gags in any horror movie ever. When he's stalking them through the like ship or whatever, and he's in that room with the one guy, and he's got the machete, and he's just like, "Oh, you, is this what you want?" And Jason takes him. He's like, "It's okay, guys. He just wants his machete back."
Machete back.
And then he fucking kills him. But it's just such a stupidly fun movie.
It really is. It really was a lot of fun to revisit. So yeah, no, absolutely. That's what's posted right now. If you go onto the website, it'll probably be, if this is posted over the weekend, that's what'll be there. Those two are the newest reviews, and then we'll have other stuff coming up, of course. We've got a bunch of other things that are in the percolator. MovieAll.com.
Yeah, go do that, and we will see you guys next week. Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.